In the previous session, we talked about the laws of success and how they apply to your life and to everything that you do. In this session, I'll be talking about the laws of achievement and how you can use them to go further and faster than perhaps you ever dreamed possible. You might be wondering about the difference between the two. They sound the same, and in many respects they are. In effect, they're the flip sides of the coin, success and achievement. They're similar, but different in design and purpose. Success can be defined as wanting what you get. Success is not necessarily determined by material things or accomplishments. You can enjoy success simply by reaching the point where you are perfectly content with your life in every respect and you feel no dissatisfaction or pressing need for anything else. In this sense, you can be a success sitting by yourself in a quiet place contemplating the world. Achievement is considerably different. Achievement refers to getting what you want rather than wanting what you get. Achievement means the ability to set goals and objectives, to make plans of action, and then to implement the plans and to overcome obstacles and adversity and achieve the ends that you set for yourself. The laws of success apply equally well to achievement, but in addition, there are a series of laws that are specific to goal attainment. These are the laws that we'll describe in this session. The basic rule of human action is that everything you do is aimed at improving your life in some way. Every action of yours is guided by purpose and intention of some kind, whether clear or unclear. The remarkable thing about your mind and your abilities is that you always seem to achieve the goals that you set for yourself. If your goal is a small one, for example, to get home at night and watch television, you'll certainly achieve it. If your goal is a large one, to achieve financial success, prosperity, and prestige among the people you live and work with, you'll achieve that as well. Your mind contains a cybernetic, goal-seeking function. Once you've programmed an intense desire into your subconscious mind, your subconscious and your superconscious minds take on a power of their own which seems to drive you inevitably toward the attainment of your ideal. In this sense, goal achieving seems to happen almost automatically. The problem is always the setting of clear goals and the harnessing of your mental and physical energy behind those goals. When you learn to do that, the rest seems to happen with an almost irresistible inevitability. As we said in the first session, the application of these laws begins with your becoming perfectly clear about your ideal desired result or purpose. You need to determine where it is you want to end up. Just as you wouldn't go to the grocery store without a shopping list, you wouldn't think of living your life without a clear list of the things that you wish to attain and a written plan of action for the attainment of each of those things. Unfortunately, according to virtually every study, less than 3% of adult Americans have clear written goals and detailed plans. According to Mark McCormick in his book, What They Still Don't Teach You at the Harvard Business School, people with written goals accomplish 10 times as much in the same period of time as those with no written goals at all. In fact, you can move yourself into the top rank of Americans living today by the simple act of sitting down with a pad of paper and a pen and writing out where you intend to go and what you intend to do to get there over the next 3 to 5 years. You will immediately become a different person, and your chances of accomplishing what you have written down will go up by about 1,000%. In my seminars, I continually urge people to write down 10 things that they want to achieve in the next 12 months. I tell them that if they do this, at the end of 12 months, they can reread the list, and they will find that probably 8 of those 10 items have been achieved, sometimes in the most remarkable of ways. I've had countless graduates from my seminars come back and tell me this is exactly what happens. For example, an insurance executive from Houston took this recommendation from me at a seminar on a Thursday afternoon. The following Sunday, he sat down and made a list of 10 things he wanted to accomplish within the next 12 months. The following evening, Monday, he opened the list and found, to his astonishment, that he had already accomplished 5 of his 10 one-year goals. He quickly wrote down 5 more goals, bringing his list back up to 10, and by the following Thursday evening, he had accomplished 5 more of the new list. He wrote and told me that he had achieved more in 5 days with written goals than he had expected to accomplish in an entire 12 months of hard work. Aside from clarity regarding your goals, there are 12 laws you need to know and practice if you really aspire to high achievement. The first law of achievement, and one of the most important laws that you'll ever learn, is the law of control. The law of control simply says that you feel positive about yourself to the degree to which you feel you are in control of your own life. The importance of control as a critical element in human personality and performance has long been recognized by the psychological profession. The term that psychologists use is locus of control. The locus or place of control refers to where you feel the control is in any particular part of your life. If you feel that you are self-determined and that you make the decisions that determine the direction of your activities, you're considered to have an internal locus of control. If you feel that you are controlled by your boss or your bills or your childhood experiences or your health or anything else, you're considered to have an external locus of control. Now, the location of this place of control in your own mind is the critical element in health and well-being. People with an internal locus of control, those who feel that they are behind the wheel of their own lives, tend to be low-stress, high-performance personalities. On the other hand, those with an external locus of control, those who feel that what they're doing is determined by other people and other pressures, have a high level of stress and a commensurately low level of performance. The research that's been done in cognitive psychology, the psychology of how you think and the relationship of your thinking to your health and happiness, concludes that a sense of control is absolutely essential for you to perform at your best. The first part of the law of control is the same as the law of change, which says that change is inevitable. Change is also scary for most people, and there's a deep-rooted desire on the part of the majority of human beings to avoid change of any kind, even positive change. However, goals allow you to control the direction of change and to assure that it is predominantly in the direction that you desire. Goals give you control over the critical elements of your life. Without goals, you are really driving down the highway of life with your hands off the wheel. The second part of the law of control is that controlled change tends to lead inevitably to greater achievement than uncontrolled change. The habit of working toward the accomplishment of important goals on a daily basis will assure that you will achieve at a far higher level than if you had no goals at all. This is, of course, obvious. The third part of the law is that to take control of your life, you must begin by taking control of your mind. Your ability to think the thoughts you want and to determine the goals and ideal results you desire is the starting point of all happiness and high attainment. Many people believe that life is a series of random occurrences and that things just happen by accident. They don't realize that by failing to plan, they're planning to fail. Nobody actually plans to live a life of underachievement and frustration, but by failing to decide specifically what they want, they end up living unconsciously and unintentionally, and what happens to them in life will appear to be a series of random occurrences over which they have little control. People who believe they have little control over their lives say things like, "You can't fight City Hall," or they say, "It's not what you know, it's who you know," or sometimes they say it's being in the right place at the right time. Many of these people believe that success is largely due to luck and to contacts and has very little to do with themselves. To show how prevalent this attitude is, in a recent survey, 63% of adult Americans revealed that they believed that the only way they were going to achieve financial independence was if they won a lottery of some kind. This means that the great majority of people think that their lives are simply one big crapshoot over which they can exert very little control. They are living by failing to plan, and they're planning to fail. People who live by this philosophy, which is in violation of and contrary to the law of cause and effect and the law of control, have a perceived lack of control, and therefore they experience negativity, pessimism, helplessness, and a feeling of being a victim in the great game of life. People who are failing to plan their lives have a tendency to blame others for their problems, to continually make excuses, to perform well below their potentials, and to indulge in forms of escapism, such as endless television watching or alcohol or drugs and aimless socializing. they really don't feel that they can make much of a difference. The wonderful thing about goals is that the very act of setting goals enables you to escape from the clutches of randomness and put yourself squarely under the law of control and cause and effect. The setting of goals gives you a feeling of power, purpose, and forward direction. It puts you in charge of your life and makes you feel terrific about yourself. This is why we call goal setting the master skill of success. It's the skill that is more important to your overall happiness and well-being than any other single skill that you can develop. The second law of achievement, which is essential for you to understand, is the law of responsibility. This law says that you are completely responsible for everything you are and have, and everything you become and achieve. The concept of individual responsibility is a major issue in life and society today. There are basically two schools of thought on this issue. One school believes that no one is really responsible and that the government or society is to blame for anything unfortunate that happens to anyone. The other school of thought says that in a society of individual freedom, individual responsibility is essential and unavoidable, and that people are responsible for the consequences of the things they do and for the things that they neglect to do. The fact about responsibility is that it's not optional. It's mandatory. No further progress in your life is possible except to the degree to which you assert a higher level of responsibility in that area. No one else can or will do it for you. And the perverse thing about responsibility is that the more of it you accept, the more people will want to help you, and the less of it that you accept, the less people will want to have anything to do with you. The first part of the law of responsibility is that, since you are always free to choose what you think and what you do, you are where you are and what you are because of your own conduct and your own behavior. Because you have complete freedom of choice and you can do and say anything you want, you can never evade complete responsibility for the things that you do or fail to do. The second part of this law is that responsibility begins with your taking full and complete control over the content of your conscious mind and your dominant thoughts. As I said in the first session, it's what you think that determines your reality. And since only you can control what you think, the very act of seizing control of your thoughts and keeping them on what you want and off of what you don't want is the beginning of self-mastery, self-control, and self-responsibility. The third part of the law of responsibility is simply that no one is coming to the rescue. If it's to be, it's up to you. If anything's going to get better in your life, it is only because you get better. If anything's going to change, it's only because you change. If things are going to improve, it is because you improve. A wonderful thing about the acceptance of complete responsibility for who you are and everything you become is that it gives you a tremendous sense of control and freedom. It makes you feel positive and happy about yourself. It puts you onto the high road to effective achievement. It enables you to put your foot on the accelerator of your own potential and to move more rapidly toward the accomplishment of the things that are important to you. This brings us now to the necessity of your deciding exactly what it is that you want in life. Here are some simple exercises that you can follow. Your first job is to make a dream list. This is a list of everything that you could ever want to have or be or do, written as though you have no limitations whatsoever on your potential. Imagine for the moment that you have no limitations with regard to your ability or your education. Imagine you have no limitations with regard to resources or contacts. Imagine that you have no limitations with regard to your intelligence or skills or abilities. Imagine that you have no limitations with regard to time or money or other constraints. Just let your mind run freely, and for a few minutes, write down everything that you could think of that you would like to accomplish in the next 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 years or beyond. The key is for you not to allow your self-limiting beliefs and fears and doubts to creep in and sabotage this exercise. The natural tendency of the poor performer is to always be thinking about the reason why things are not possible, rather than defining clearly what he or she wants in advance of taking those limitations into consideration. Some people will come up with a list of 5 or 10 things they want. Others will come up with a list of 200 or 300 items that they want to accomplish. One very successful real estate broker, a friend of mine, started off in real estate by writing down everything he could possibly want in a spiral notebook. Over time, he filled many pages with hundreds of small and large goals. Eventually, he became extraordinarily successful in real estate and made an enormous amount of money with which he was able to achieve most of the goals he'd written down. As Tom Hopkins says, goals are the fuel in the furnace of achievement. This goes back to the law of motivation, which says that in order for there to be motivation, there must be a motive. It takes us back to the fact that 85% of your motivation is determined by the consequences that you anticipate or the things that you hope to achieve as a result of engaging in certain actions and certain behaviors. The clearer you are about what you want and the more things that you want, the more motivated and energetic you will be in obtaining those goals. Once you've written down everything you can think of that you want for any reason, set priorities on your goals. Go back over the list and write down either an A, a B, or a C next to each item. Next to the items that are most important to you, the ones that can make the greatest difference in your life and which you desire most intensely, write the letter A. Next to the things that you would really like to have, but which are not as important or as life-changing as the first category, you write the letter B. Next to each of the remaining items, things that you wrote down that would be nice for you to accomplish but which you don't care about passionately, write the letter C. The second part of this exercise is for you to transfer all of your A goals to a separate sheet of paper. Once you've done this, go back over these goals and organize them by writing A1 next to the most important goal, A2 next to the second most important goal, A3 next to the third most important goal, and so on until you've organized all of your A goals in order of importance to you. Your A1 goal should be your major definite purpose, the most important single goal in your life. All really successful men and women have goals in each important part of their lives, but also they have one goal, which is their umbrella goal, the single most important thing they are working on at any given time. In looking at your goals, it's advisable for you to divide them into three categories as well. The first category is your personal and family goals. These are the reasons why you're doing what you're doing. It's very important for you to be crystal clear about the underlying reasons why you want the material and tangible goals that you're working for. Many people get sidetracked working for material things and lose all sight of the reasons why they're doing it. Your second set of goals are your career and your material goals. These are the what of your goal list. These are the things that you have to do in order to get to the why. The what or business and financial goals on your list will be things like career achievements, amounts of financial income, quantities of sales or profits. They're the money and the things of your life. Your third type of goals are your personal development goals. These are the how goals. These are the things that you must do or become competent at doing in order to achieve the material goals, which will lead you to the accomplishment of your personal and family goals. And you need to have a set of goals in each of these areas for your life to be in balance and for you to perform at your very best. Once you've taken your original list of goals and broken it down by A's, B's, and C's, and then transferred your A's onto a single page and organized them in order of priority, you're now ready to begin the planning stage. In the planning stage, you take a clean sheet of paper and you write your A1 goal at the top of the page in the present tense as though it were already a reality. For example, you could write, I earn $50,000 per year. Now, you use what we call the 20 idea method and write down a list of 20 things that you could do that would help you move toward the attainment of that goal. Write down everything you can think of. For example, you could write down, I could work harder and smarter in my current field and increase my productivity and income. You could also write down, I could upgrade my skills so that the value of my work was higher in the same period of time. Or you could write something completely different, such as, I could change my career or company completely and start at a different job or in a different industry. In any case, write down at least 20 activities that you could engage in to help you to achieve your goals. Once you've done that, do the same thing for each of your other A goals so that you have a series of A goals with a list of 20 activities or more that you could engage in to accomplish each one. Then, you sit down with your first list of 20 items under your A1 most important goal, and you organize those items by time and priority. Which are the things which you can do or should do or begin first? What are the things that are most important and would make the greatest difference to the attainment of the goal? Write down an A or a B or a C next to each of the 20 items, and then write down A1, A2, A3, B1, B2, B3, and so on next to the items so that you have organized them from beginning to end. You now have a list of your most important goals organized by priority and a list of the activities you must engage in to achieve those goals, also organized by priority. Your final exercise is to merge your major goals and your major activities into a single plan and then to begin to organize your day-to-day life around that plan. It's important that you review this plan on a regular basis. One of the most motivational things that you can do is to make a resolution to do something every day to move yourself toward the attainment of one of your most important goals. This will help you to develop and maintain momentum, and you'll be astonished at how rapidly you begin to make progress on even the largest and most challenging goals that you can think of using this method. Once you've made a list of your goals, the third law of achievement is the law of compensation. This law says that you are always fully compensated for whatever you do. It's often called the law of reciprocity, which says that people will always reciprocate in kind for whatever you do, either to or for them. My friend Zig Ziglar, the great speaker and motivator, has formulated what we might call Ziglar's Law, which is a paraphrase of the law of compensation, and it says you can have anything you want in life if you just help enough other people get what they want. The law of compensation is a sublaw of the law of cause and effect, or the law of sowing and reaping, which says, whatsoever a man soweth, that also shall he reap. Basically, the law of compensation says that whatever you put in, you get out. You cannot reap it unless you have sown it in advance. In fact, you can say that whatever you're reaping today is a measure of what you've sown in the past. If you want to reap something more in the future, you have to sow something more or different or better in the present. It's completely up to you. In Ralph Waldo Emerson's wonderful essay, Compensation, which is one of the finest pieces of writing in the English language, he says that the longer you put in without getting out, the greater will be your return when it finally comes. Some years ago, the Kingston Trio had a song with a line that said, you've got to prime the pump. You must have faith and believe. You've got to give of yourself before you're willing to receive. This law or principle runs throughout all of human history and is virtually inviolate. This leads us to the fourth law of achievement, the law of service, which says that your rewards in life will always be in direct proportion to the value of your service to others. The first part of this law is that all fortunes begin with the sale of personal services. The second part of this law is that if you wish to increase the size of your rewards, you must increase the quality and quantity of your service. And the third part of the law of service is everyone works on commission. Tom Peters, in his book In Search of Excellence, says that the top managers in the leading companies all seem to have an obsession with customer service. The most successful men and women in our society are those who are able to lose themselves in serving the people who depend upon them, their customers, their employers, and others. When you combine the laws of compensation and of service, you have the key to obtaining anything that you really want. You'll get out exactly what you put in, and wonderfully enough, you have complete control over what you put in. When you devote yourself completely to serving your customers, your boss, your staff, the people who purchase or use your products and services, it gives you a tremendous feeling of meaning and purpose. It causes you to feel that you are really making a difference in the world. In his book, The Achievers by Alan Cox, He says that the most successful people in any corporation are those who are able to lose themselves in their jobs and in serving their customers. When you start to throw your whole heart into making your customers happy and serving them better than anyone else, you'll be putting both your career and your financial life onto the fast track. One of the keys to mental and emotional well-being is for you to know that you're working at the outside limit of your potential. You need to feel that you're stretching yourself fully and that you're putting your whole heart into what you're doing. The fifth law of achievement is the law of applied effort. This law simply says that all things are amenable to hard work. There's nothing that will bring you to the attention of your superiors faster than your developing a reputation for being a hard worker. People who are in a position to help you and accelerate your career will tend to be very impressed by your willingness to work harder and longer than anyone else. In Dr. Thomas Stanley's study of affluent Americans, almost every one of the self-made millionaires he interviewed told him that their success was due more to hard work than to any other factor. In America, you work 40 hours per week for survival. If all you work is 40 hours, all you get is enough money to survive. You tread water and you basically stay even, but you don't get very far ahead and you never achieve the kind of success that's possible for you. However, every hour over 40 hours that you put in, either on your job or on yourself, improving your knowledge and skills, is an investment in your success. You can tell where you're going to be in 3 to 5 years with unerring accuracy by simply looking at the number of hours over 40 that you're working each week. The average work week for both executives and small business owners in America is approximately 58 to 59 hours. Many successful men and women find themselves working 70 and even 80 hours a week during the critical formative stages of their careers. An addition to the law of applied effort is that all great success is preceded by a long period of hard work in a single direction toward a clearly defined purpose. You need to continually ask yourself, what am I trying to do and how am I trying to do it? It's not enough just to work hard or to work long hours. You must be working on high value-added tasks and activities toward the accomplishment of meaningful and important goals. A second part of this law is that the harder you work, the luckier you get. It seems that your ability to work hard will open up the Red Sea of opportunity for you and will bring to your assistance all manner of people and resources that you could not have imagined would come your way. The third part of the law of applied effort is that to achieve more than the average, you must work longer and harder than the average. This is simply a way of restating the fact that you can only take more out of life if you're putting more into life. And the more you put in, the more you'll get out. The law of cause and effect is absolute. You will invariably reap what you sow. And if you sow more, you'll eventually reap more. The sixth law of achievement is the law of overcompensation. This is a companion law to the law of applied effort, and it simply says that you must be continually looking for opportunities to go beyond the requirements of your job. Napoleon Hill, perhaps the foremost researcher on success in the first half of the 20th century, concluded that one of the keys to great success in America was the willingness to go the extra mile. He wrote that because of this principle, your future potential is unlimited because there's no restriction whatsoever on the extra things that you can do to add greater value to your work. You can go the extra mile in everything that you do, every day and in every way. You can always be looking for opportunities to exceed expectations. Earl Nightingale advised that you should always put in more than you take out, or you'll never take out more than you're getting right now. The only way that you can be paid more is by putting greater value into your work and achieving greater results. Another way of stating the law of overcompensation is that you must always do more than you're paid for if you ever want to be paid for more than you're doing. A young woman who was working as a secretary for a large company in Florida came to me at a seminar recently and told me her story. She said that she had listened to one of my audio tapes, and as a result, she had set a goal to increase her income by 50%. In her heart, she said, she didn't really believe it was possible because of the salary structure in her company. Nonetheless, she went to work to increase the value of her service to her boss. She applied the law of overcompensation to everything she did. She learned how to do new things, and she began a little earlier and stayed a little later. To make a long story short, within 6 months, her boss had quietly raised her salary in stages from $1,500 per month to $2,250 per month, and had given her these increases without her ever having asked for them. All she did was to concentrate on seeking out ways to work harder and smarter and to serve her boss better with the things he needed. He automatically increased her pay because he recognized how much she had increased her value to him. The remarkable thing is this. She worked up to the age of 25 to get her salary up to $1,500 per month. In just 6 months, however, by applying these principles, she increased her salary by 50%. And so can you. It is simply a matter of applying these laws to your work on a daily basis. The seventh law of achievement is the law of preparation, which says that perfect performance is preceded by painstaking preparation. The mark of the serious person and the real professional in any field is that he takes more time to prepare thoroughly than the average person does. The non-serious person or the non-professional always attempts to bluff or to wing it. He tries to get by with the minimum of preparation without realizing that his level of preparation is immediately evident to everyone around him. One of my favorite quotes, which has had a powerful effect in shaping my life and attitude, comes from Abraham Lincoln, who said, "I shall study and prepare myself, and someday my chance will come." He recognized, as do all great men and women, that painstaking and thorough preparation is the key to the future. The first part of the law of preparation is simply, do your homework. It's the details that trip you up every single time. My friend Joel Weldon gave a wonderful talk a few years ago entitled, "Elephants Don't Bite." The essence of his talk was that it was the mosquitoes of life, the small things that tend to be ignored, that cause you the most trouble. No one ever gets bitten by an elephant, but people get bitten by mosquitoes all the time. His message was that if you want to get to the top of your field, you must be fastidious about the little things because, as a minister once said, God is in the details. The second part of the law of preparation comes from the business writer Peter Drucker, who wrote that action without thinking is the cause of every failure. Action without taking the time to think through the details and their possible ramifications seems to be the underlying cause of most failure in life. The opposite of this statement is that action preceded by thinking and planning is the cause of virtually every success. This doesn't mean that you'll automatically be successful if you plan thoroughly in advance, but it means that you must almost inevitably fail if you don't do it. The third part of this law comes from Benjamin Trigo, who said that if it's not worth doing, it's not worth doing well. Details are important, it's true, but you need to think through the value and importance of each detail before you overcommit your time and your resources to them. The eighth law of achievement is the law of forced efficiency. This law states that the more things you have to do in a limited space of time, the more you will be forced to work on your most important tasks. This is another way of saying that there's never enough time to do everything, but there's always enough time to do the important things. The more you take on, the more likely it is that you'll be forced to think analyze, and evaluate your tasks and activities in such a way that you spend your limited mental and physical energy on just those tasks that are the most vital to your success. There are two parts of the law of forced efficiency. The first is that there will never be enough time to do everything that you have to do. The busier and more successful you become, the more true this statement will be. If you have lots of time to do your work, it means that you are underemployed, underpaid, and well along on the low road to frustration and disappointment in your career. The fact is that you can only discover how much you can do by trying to do too much. You can only find out how far you can go by going too far. You discover how much you can take on by taking on more than you can do. The second part of this law, which is the key question in personal efficiency and time management, is to ask yourself continually, what is the most valuable use of my time right now? Always keep yourself on track and focus on your most important responsibilities by asking yourself hour by hour and minute by minute, what is the most valuable use of my time right now? The ninth law of achievement is the law of decision. It says that every great leap forward in life is preceded by a clear decision that leads to action. All high-achieving men and women tend to be very decisive in their thoughts and actions. They think things through carefully. They decide exactly what they want, and then they make clear decisions and take action to make those decisions a reality. In your life, you've had several experiences where you've been unsure of what to do, and you've resolved your dilemma by making a clear decision one way or the other. In looking back, you'll probably find that that was the turning point for you, and that everything else flowed from the decision. The ability to make good decisions is one of the most critical thinking skills of the successful man or woman. In fact, in one study, the careers of managers who were promoted rapidly were compared to those of managers who were passed over for promotion. Researchers found the one distinguishing behavior between the two groups was that the more rapidly promoted managers were more decisive in doing their jobs. The interesting fact that came out of this study was that, given written tests with hypothetical problems, both sets of managers were equally accurate in their answers. The more successful managers, however, on the job, were willing to make decisions based on their answers, while the unsuccessful managers were afraid to for fear of making a mistake. The very act of being decisive can be the critical factor that enables you to take command of a situation and move ahead more rapidly. We've found that high achievers are not necessarily those who make the right decisions every time, but they are those people who make their decisions right. They accept feedback and self-correct. They take in new information and they change if necessary, but they are always decisive, always moving forward, never wishy-washy or vacillating in their attitudes toward life. The first part of the law of decision is simply this: act boldly and unseen forces will come to your aid. It seems that when you grasp a situation and step forward courageously, a series of unseen forces, most of which are explained by the laws in this program, seem to emerge and help you to achieve your goals. Your very willingness to take action rather than to delay or procrastinate seems to bring universal powers to your assistance. The second part of the law of decision comes from the wonderful book by Dorothea Brand entitled Wake Up and Live. She wrote that the discovery that changed her life and the lives of thousands of others who heard it from her in her public talks was the simple success formula that says, act as if it were impossible to fail, and it shall be. When you imagine that your success will be guaranteed if you simply take action, and you act on that premise, a whole series of forces begins to support you and move you toward the attainment of your desires. So, when in doubt, act as if it were impossible to fail and push forward. The third part of the law of decision comes from the famous Nike commercial, which says, just do it. These three words really summarize one of the great formulas for success. Just do it. So, be decisive. Go for it. Take a chance. Act boldly, and unseen forces will come to your aid. The 10th law of achievement is the law of creativity. It says that every advance in human life begins with an idea in the mind of one person. It's ideas that you generate that enable you to solve your problems, overcome your obstacles, and achieve your goals. Ideas are the keys to the future. It's hardly possible for you to achieve anything of note except to the degree to which you think and do something new and different from what's been done before. All it takes is a small innovation to lay the foundation for a fortune and great success in life. The first part of this law says that your ability to generate constructive ideas is, to all intents and purposes, unlimited. Therefore, your future potential is unlimited as well. Ideas are a mode of transportation, a vehicle that you can use to take you from wherever you are to wherever you want to go. Your job is simply to generate as many ideas as possible, to evaluate them carefully against your current goals, and then to take action on them. There's virtually no obstacle in life that you cannot overcome with the power of thought, with the power of creative concentration, with the power of ideas. The second part of this law comes from Napoleon Hill, who said in his famous words, "Whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve." Your mind is structured in such a way that you cannot at the same time have an idea and not also have the ability to bring that idea into reality. The very existence of an idea in your conscious mind means that you have within you and around you the capacity to achieve it. The only question you have to ask yourself is, how badly do I want it? The third part of the law of creativity comes from Napoleon Bonaparte, who said, "Imagination rules the world." Everything you see around you is the result of what was initially a single idea in the mind of a single person. Our entire world started from thought brought into reality. The fourth and final part of this law comes from Einstein, who said simply that imagination is more important than facts. There have been countless occasions in your life and in the lives of others where the facts say one thing, but your ideas and creative energy enable you to do something completely different. Virtually every important turning point in your life will be marked by an idea that you've had at that time and that moment. All great changes in human life and human destiny begin with an idea that causes you to see things differently and to take action that you would not have taken in the absence of that idea. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, whatever your situation, you have the creative capacity in the form of an infinite ability to generate ideas to solve any problem and achieve any goal. It's up to you. The 11th law of achievement is the law of flexibility. This law says that success is best achieved when you are clear about the goal, but flexible about the process of getting there. This is one of the most important conclusions ever reached by high-achieving men and women. When you set a clear goal for yourself and make a plan, you usually have a fairly good idea of what it is you have to do to get whatever it is you want to achieve. However, 1,000 things can change, each of which will require alterations in your plan of action. The most optimistic and enthusiastic people are those who are open and flexible and fluid in the face of the inevitable and the myriad changes required as they move toward the accomplishment of something that's important to them. The first part of the law of flexibility is that the experience of resistance and frustration is often an indication that you're doing the wrong thing. Whenever you feel that you're butting your head against the wall and not making progress, step back and re-examine your plan. Be sure that the goal that you're working toward is still the goal that you desire, and then sit down and make better plans. Take the mentality of a computer programmer. When he designs a computer program, he knows that the program will be full of defects when it's completed. No computer program ever works perfectly the first time it's tried. However, the programmer accepts this as a fact of life and then begins to go back through the program step by step to remove the defects. When the programmer is finished, the program will operate perfectly. By the same token, whenever your plans don't seem to be bearing fruit, Look in the mirror. Re-examine your plans and redesign them until you have faultless plans that work and move you forward without anxiety and frustration. The second part of the law of flexibility is that you are only as free in life as the number of developed options that you have available to you. Your freedom and happiness is largely determined by the number of alternatives that you've developed in case your first choice doesn't work. The more thoroughly developed your options and alternatives, the more freedom you have. If one course of action doesn't develop as you expected, you're fully prepared to switch. In my courses on decision making, once a decision has been reached, I encourage the participants to ask the question, what else would be a good decision in this situation? The very exercise of developing alternatives enables you to think more clearly and can be a major contributor to the level of achievement that you experience. The third part of the law of flexibility is that crisis is change trying to take place. Whenever you're experiencing a crisis or difficulty of any kind, stand back for a moment and ask yourself, what change is trying to take place that is being signaled to me as a result of this crisis? You may be having a crisis in your work, in your personal relationships, with your health, or with your business. In almost every case, a crisis is an indication that something is wrong and that pursuing the same course would be an unwise thing to do. So, what is the change that's trying to take place in your life right now? And the fourth part of the law of flexibility is that errant assumptions lie at the root of every failure. Almost every failure you have will be based on an incorrect assumption that you've made and accepted without question. It's always a good exercise to clarify your assumptions, especially when things aren't going as well as you want. So, what are your assumptions? First, what are your explicit assumptions, the ones you're clearly aware of? And second, what are your implicit assumptions, the ones that you may be accepting without question? What if your most cherished assumptions were wrong? What changes would this dictate? How flexible and fluid would you have to be to redirect your course of action if something that you were assuming as a fact turned out not to be true at all? Whenever you make the right decisions and you achieve your goals on schedule, it's always because the assumptions that you were operating on turned out to be true. Many people go broke in starting their own businesses because they assume that there's a big enough market for the product or service that they propose to offer. They also assume that customers will switch from their current suppliers to them for no other reason than that they are in the marketplace. They sometimes assume that they have the talents and skills and abilities to provide the product or service at a competitive price and still make a profit. Well, your willingness to question your assumptions, to test your assumptions against reality, with the willingness to accept the possibility that you could be wrong, is the kind of attitude that will ultimately lead you to great achievement. Flexibility is considered to be perhaps the most important single quality necessary for success in our competitive society for the rest of the century and into the century beyond. The 12th law of achievement is the law of persistence. This law says that your ability to persist in the face of setbacks and disappointments is your measure of your belief in yourself and your ability to succeed. Persistence is the iron quality of success. Sometimes your willingness to persist is your greatest asset and is the quality that separates you from everyone else. Sometimes the strongest thing you have going for you is your ability to persist longer than anyone else. The first part of the law of persistence is simply that persistence is self-discipline in action. It's when you face the inevitable setbacks and delays and disappointments and temporary defeats, and you continue to persist in spite of them, that you demonstrate to yourself and others that you have the character of self-discipline and self-mastery that is absolutely indispensable for the great success that you desire. Churchill summarized the second part of the law of persistence when he said, "Never give up. Never, never give up." Churchill believed, and he proved throughout his lifetime, that bulldog tenacity in the face of what appeared to be overwhelming defeat was often the critical quality that turned that defeat into victory. When you begin to live your life in harmony with the laws of success and achievement that we've talked about so far, and you back all of your goals and plans with unshakable determination and persistence, you will eventually find that there is nothing in the world that can stop you. You will become an irresistible force of nature, and your goals of high achievement will become your realities.